The line now, we're going to be talking to Dublin City Council historian and resident Cormac Moore. Cormac, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Okay, we're going to be talking about the Anglo-Irish Treaty negotiations, which all took place on the 11th of October, 1921. So, give us a rundown on that particular week and what happened.
Yes, so what I might do, because I'm sure I'll have plenty of time to talk about the full treaty negotiations and their impact over the next few weeks, because the negotiations took place from 11th of October to 6th of December 1921, when the treaty was signed. So what we're talking about is we really are now in the kind of the take of the most contentious issues involving the decade of commemorations. Obviously, partition is still in full swing. We obviously mm-hmm. see the ramifications of Pat's Day with people's viewpoints on it. But now we're going to kind of the how the kind of seeds are sown for the start of the Civil War, which began in the summer of 1922. And it really comes down to the treaty and the signing of it. But we have to go back a bit, I suppose. The talks actually started this week in London 100 years ago, but it was made up of a certain amount of plenipotentiaries. But one of the key figures, and the key figure of Sinn Féin, wasn't there, which is one of the most talked about issues over the last 100 years, is why didn't De Valera go himself?
Mm-hmm.
And why did he send Collins, Griffiths, Barton, Duffy, and Duggan mm-hmm. as the actual penitentiaries, and that's one thing. And that was kind of there was actually general agreement at the time, within Sinn Féin, within the Dáil, that De Valera shouldn't go. Many people who opposed De Valera subsequently actually support him, like Kevin O'Higgins, for example, who was W.T. Cosgrave's assistant at the time. He said, he thought it was a good tactical move for the president to remain above kind of the negotiations. Some claim presidents don't negotiate with prime ministers, and it was good to have De Valera, at home. He's the symbol of the republic, the symbol of the state, and that it's better having him at home.
Yeah,
and that was his point. His point said, I'm more than a person. I'm actually a symbol here as the president of the republic, so I need to be at home. And not negotiate, and then there's obviously the very contentious issue, which was decided at this time as well, was De Valera selected the plenipotentiaries, but what did the term plenipotentiary mean?
Mm-hmm.
Now, pretty much everyone other than De Valera thought the term plenipotentiary meant that they had the right to make decisions, whereas De Valera claimed it had to be ratified by the cabinet before any decisions could be made. So those were the issues that were foremost amongst people's minds at this time, about 100 years ago. The delegates went over. Collins. There's a lot of talk about Collins, and he was the EOB from West Cork, as some people have said. But Collins was an experienced politician at this stage, mm-hmm. even though he obviously had a key role in the IRA. He was also Minister for Finance, pretty much since the first Dáil. So he was a senior member of government. So, of course, he would have been considered as one of the people to be one of the negotiation teams. Just this idea that Collins shouldn't have gone. He was more of an army man. He never fought in any kind of engagement since he's arriving. Most of his work was administrative, and as I said, he was a very effective minister of finance. So he clearly was a strong contender to be on the penitentiary team. As it transpired of the actual the delegates, the plenipotentiaries, they had secretaries like Erskine Chillers and other people over there as well. But as it transpired, of the people who were over, Griffith, Collins, and Duggan actually were the more moderates in terms of what they were looking for,
mm-hmm.
whereas Duffy and Barton were more on the side that De Valera would have been on,
right.
As it transpired.
Yeah, it seems from what you're saying there that now to me they didn't sit down before Collins went over with Dev and trashed this out. This is what excuse me. This is what you're not to come home with, and this is what we want. And if it goes away from that, you've got to come back and we've got to sit down and talk it out.
Yeah.
Because
most of what, as I said, most people agree that De Valera shouldn't go, but Collins didn't. He actually thought that, look, De Valera didn't want to go himself because he knew De Valera knew there was a compromise.
Yeah.
And he didn't want the person to bring it home.
Right.
That was a huge problem with the Irish delegation. If you compare with the British delegation, who'd done their homework on the Irish, they actually, you know, knew, like, they knew what Griffith's stance on the North, for example, were. They had a good idea of what their roles were at plenipotentiaries, and they knew how to use that. This is all Dublin Castle had prepared this before the actual negotiations began. Whereas the plenipotentiaries arrived with nothing. They had no alternative proposals to the ones from the British had offered in July. So they really were kind of arriving at Downing Street with their hands swinging against one of the most formidable negotiating teams ever assembled. So they really were faced with a daunting task, and the fact that they didn't do their homework didn't all go well for how it was going to go.
Yeah, they definitely weren't prepared anyway. And of course, that then led to what we know now was the Civil War sometime after that. The treaty itself, as you say, it was Michael Collins and Arthur Griffin. How did they fare out then when they came back to Ireland after that? Because obviously,
some people wanted to arrest him on the spot. Cottle Brew had asked for, when the boat was arriving back from England, that they be arrested on the spot. But there was a relief amongst some people. There was deep anger, like obviously with De Valera, there was deep anger and frustration and humiliation that they actually signed without his consent. The division didn't just happen overnight once the treaty was signed. You know, there were seeds being sown there anyway. You know, there was and one of the reasons why De Valera himself didn't go was because there were hardliners who, insisted there must be a republic, which was never a realistic option. And a lot of people in Sinn Féin had accepted that well before the treaty negotiations, that there wasn't going to be a republic. But others were adamant that there could only be a republic, nothing else. So this obviously, once they came back without a republic, the signing of the Oath of Allegiance, they got a number of compromises on that from the British, that a Dáil deputy, whoever was in the Dáil, had to sign allegiance to the Free State and to the Crown. You know, so it was a little bit different than other dominions, but there was this vote of allegiance, and that was actually seen as the most difficult pill for most anti-treatyites to swallow.
Yeah. And when you say the Republic there, we were just talking basically about the 26 counties. Northern Ireland was never on the table.
No, it was on the table. Oh, absolutely. Ulster was a huge part of the negotiation. And this is often the misconception. Ulster dominated the discussions, the talks between the four talks between De Valera and by George in July, and then all the correspondence subsequently, and Ulster formed a huge part of the negotiations of the treaty. So what the Irish wanted was to have, and they were open to this federal concept, Northern Ireland would still exist, but would have to be subservient to an All-Ireland Parliament in Dublin, as opposed to Westminster. That was something that Lloyd George was open to, and other members of the British government. And they tried to get James Craig to agree to that during the negotiations, but that failed. And then the British offered this boundary commission idea, which Griffiths in particular believed would actually lead to huge tracts of Northern Ireland being transferred to the Irish Free State, and which would make the rest of Northern Ireland unviable. So that was the so-called solution to the North that was agreed in the treaty. And most nationalists, North and South, pro and anti-treaty side, actually thought this was a good mechanism to bring about at least limit partition and make the rest of it on by the runt. But that was actually misplaced, misguided as events transpired.
Right. So Okay, you're going to be dealing with a whole host of things over the next couple of days, weeks actually, if you go by the time it took the treaty from October to December. So what else have you got in store? Are you doing any of your online programs, or are you back as I say live in person?
Well, yeah, no, like still a lot of the stuff that's been done online. Like I'll be giving a number of talks online, some face to face for different history societies and different voluntary groups. I'll be giving a talk on the treaty with Raheny Library on the 6th of December, the 100th anniversary of its signing. That's Monday the 6th of December, and that'll be by Zoom as well.
What time is that?
Yeah, I think things will be opening up. Obviously, like the 22nd of October is a big day for libraries, so I think the Dublin City Library is going to sit down and decide what are the best options in terms of delivering events to people and so on.
Right. What time is that taking place in Raheny Library, 6th December?
That'll be 7 p.m.
7 p.m. Just for people to like to go along and listen in, take part. Yeah. Michael Collins came away with ended up a civil war, if you want to put it that way, and that's what happened. How did that civil war? I often wonder how that civil war affected Northern Ireland, or did it?
Well, it did, because there was a civil war in all but name in the north for the first 6 months of 1922. There's a huge amount of violence. Like there have been a lot of sectarian violence from the summer of 1920 up until summer 1922. But the most of that, and the most intense period of that 2 years, was that first half of 22. So Collins, for example, he, on the one hand, he was saying that he was going to work the treaty, he was going to, you know, he signed pacts with James Craig in January, March. But on the other hand, he was obstructing the North, and he was actually supporting and aiding raids along and across the border. Like, you know, he's involved in kidnapping of 40 loyalists in early February 22, because there was a lot of particularly in Belfast, there was a lot of Catholic civilians being killed by loyalist mobs and supported by the specials and RIC as well. Mm-hmm. So there was there was intense violence happening in the north in that period, and there was even an IRA offensive in May, which was meant to be, you know, kind of keep the actual pro and anti-treaty sides united, because the one thing they could agree on was that, you know, they wanted to end partition. The colonists tried to get them all on board, and there was an attempt at a May offensive that the IRA would actually make the North unviable militarily. It peaked out pretty much from the moment it started, because most units of the IRA, particularly in the south of Ireland, didn't go up to the North, so it left to the Northern IRA. And then the enforcement of the Special Powers Act, which was brought in by the Northern government in April, that was really severe in terms of you could be flogged on the street, could just be picked up in turns on cargo ships like the Argenta, and that kind of stopped a lot of the violence. And the biggest kind of factor that stopped all the violence in the North was actually the start of the Civil War in the South. So the IRA obviously focused on the Civil War, and pretty much the violence stopped overnight in the North because of the start of the Civil War.
So, down south.
Yeah, there was huge implications for the Civil War and for the North.
Yeah, we look at Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael there, and like people say, it's there's no different. It's just Civil War politics, if you want to put it that way. As a historian, how do you see the joining up of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil now as a government here in Southern Ireland?
Well, I think both parties would disagree that they're the same party, you know, and they're, I just don't see it happening. I just don't see members of either party, particularly Fianna Fáil, wanting to ban the zoo with joining Fianna Gael. I just don't see it happening. There's a lot of people involved.
I don't mean coming as one party. Sorry, Cormac. Yeah. I don't mean coming them as one party, but actually they're actually joined together for a period of time.
In coalition government, you'd love to have to ask each party about that, but I would imagine that there was a lot of internal debate and discussion about doing it, and a lot of people were against it. Some accepted it, you know, and it is what what it is at the moment.
Yes, indeed. Okay, I know you're going to be back over the next couple of weeks. You'll be talking to Noel, and you'll be talking more about what took place regarding the treaty and the following. So we leave it there, if that's okay, Cormac.
Great, thanks very much.
Unless there's anything else you'd like to mention yourself there.
No, that's the way. There's loads of time to discuss the full treaty negotiations over the coming weeks.
Brilliant. And as you said there, the 6th of December, 7 p.m. down in Raheny Library.
It will be by Zoom, though. It won't be in person.
I beg your pardon. It's on the Zoom. Okay, well, those of you that are able to get into all this Zoom stuff, 6th of December, you can go there at Raheny Library. Will there be a link to it? I suppose you'll give Noel that information itself.
Oh, yeah. That'll all be
lovely.
Available.
That's great. Brilliant.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for taking the call. Take care. Bye-bye.
All the best. Bye-bye.
And there you go, folks. That's Cormac Moore, and historian resident at Dublin City Council. And talking about the treaty there, and no doubt over the next couple of weeks, that's what it's all going to be all about. I mean, you can see it's raising its head already with whatever is happening up in the north.